It's Life and Taxes here on the Talk Station FM 107.1 with Andrew Foster of Harvell and Collins. And with that, Andrew, good morning to you. Well, actually, good afternoon to you since we're pre-recording this.
Good afternoon, Lockwood.
So what's on tap this week?
Well, first, just want to mention to our listeners, if you haven't heard already, the Inflation Reduction Act, mm-hmm. the new IRA that we previewed for you a few weeks ago,
right,
has been signed into law by the president, passed by both houses of Congress. We mentioned that it would be done through what's called the reconciliation process, mm-hmm. which means that it was filibuster-proof. It was straight party line votes. The Senate split 50-50. Therefore, Kamala Harris, the vice president, broke the tie and allowed the bill to pass through the budget reconciliation process. You know, it's a bill that has a number of tax provisions that are in it, mm-hmm. From energy credits to a corporate alternative minimum tax for, you know, large corporations. We'll see where the breaking point on that ends up being at the end of the day. And also, the thing that's getting the most headlines is 87,000 new IRS employees, because the funding for the IRS has been increased by $80 billion over the course of the next decade. So, of course, you know, what does that mean for our listeners out there? And, you know, the thing about it is, if you upgrade your house with some more energy efficient products, there's maybe a tax credit for you. You know, there may be a possibility for you to get that. If you go and buy an electric vehicle, you know, you may, and I keep saying may because there is income limits, there's manufacturer limits, there is, okay, where is the battery source? We have to look at that, Lockwood, relative to these new requirements. So you may walk into a dealership and the short answer might be, we need to plug your VIN number into this and see if possibly all the component parts were manufactured where they need to be manufactured. What is your income, by the way? We need to find that out, because you may or may not be eligible for this credit. That one's kind of a wild one, you know, relative to the electric vehicles, because the reality is, it appears, just from my reading of it, that the income limits are so low on who's allowed to take it, Lockwood, that you can't hardly afford to buy the electric vehicle if you got the income that they want you to have to get the $7,500 credit. So it's just a little bit nutty on that front. But, you know, I think the real thing that concerns our listeners is hearing 87,000 IRS agents.
Right.
And the bulk of those agents are going to be tasked with enforcement, tax code enforcement. And the reason for that is because they're projecting that by giving the IRS $80 billion, they're going to return $300 billion. Mm-hmm. So how do they do that? Audits and enforcement. So therefore, that is what is on the landscape. Yes, there's money that's been allocated for IT, the improvement of, you know, resources online. But, you know, again, the bulk of that is going to go to enforcement regulation. So therefore, you know, these audit levels that we keep mentioning year upon year keep going down, and are infinitesimal at this point in time for the percentage. You know, I do anticipate that we'll see those go up over the course of the next few years as these agents get hired and then are tasked with, you know, looking into taxpayers' returns and records.
All right. One of the things we've talked about in the past, and again, Andrew Foster of Harvell and Collins with us this afternoon, Harvell and Collins, spell out the word and, please, harvellandcollins.com, or give them a call, 726-9050. But one of the questions I have for you, Andrew, is, and we've talked about this in the past, there are an inordinate number, I'd like to use the number, but I can't remember, of tax forms that have yet to be reviewed. Mm-hmm. And would this possibly accelerate that? Because you've got people who are probably patiently waiting for, well, there's several things. They're waiting for possible refunds.
Yep.
But two, it would greatly determine what their next level of activity is in the upcoming tax year as well, if I'm not mistaken. So you need to know what kind of experience you had last year, and it also is a trend line for a lot of corporations too.
Yeah.
So, and individuals. Will this help? Well, is there enough time that, or can it be done quickly enough that it'll sort of accelerate the review of some of these outstanding tax forms?
Good question. Time will tell. You know, I mean, I hate to say that, and I hate to say it's what we're going to see. I mean, this bill just got passed. The ink is still wet on it, so to speak. So, I mean, how fast can they find these people? How fast can they get them, you know, implemented? Where do they go? Where do they assign them? You know, like I said, the bulk are going to be, maybe they will assign some to processing and reviewing. They certainly need to assign some of them for reviewing the mail. I mean, we mentioned that before. I've got several clients right now, Lockwood, with outstanding issues where I've requested either collection due process hearings, or we've sent correspondence in and we got the standard stock, you know, we'll get back to you in 90 days letter. But literally that's where they acknowledge receipt of that they've got our documents, but nothing substantive have come through that process. So, you know, a lot of people, a lot of our listeners probably are in holding patterns, right, just as you very well mentioned, which is they've got unsettled issues from, you know, probably as far back as 2019, in all honesty, that have yet to be resolved, that, you know, yes, will affect their future tax years potentially.
Yeah, I'm thinking about the transfer of assets, maybe from an estate or something of this nature. Wow. Okay, the other quick question for you, of course, so now acknowledging the fact that we're looking at the potential for tax reviews, our audits, this goes to the topic of how we prepare our taxes.
Yeah, exactly.
We need to be pretty diligent. And I'm wondering, and obviously this benefits you, but if we use a formal legal service, an accounting firm, a law firm, to do our preparation for our taxes, does that to a degree sort of lower our profile, if you will, from the perspective of possible audits?
Certainly, I think it does. I mean, that's one of the things when you talk about raising red flags. Okay. If you have a CPA involved in preparation of a return, you know, there is
an expectation.
There is an expectation, and there's also preparation fee penalties that are out there, meaning that if the CPA doesn't do their due diligence, they can be held accountable for putting things on the return that are incorrect. So, yes, I totally agree with you. If you have a professional that prepares the return, that will lower your profile. You know, the other big thing about it is that the I just mentioned to you about these new credits and how complicated they are, and how this bill certainly did not simplify the tax code. I mean, you know, before it was, you know, you have certain administrations who want to get such as the Trump administration wanted to get the tax form down to a postcard,
right?
You know, at the end of the day. And now you've got adding layers of complexity with alternative minimum tax and tax credits that have all kind of hoops that you have to jump through. So you're right, Lockwood, getting the preparation done by a professional is probably, if you've got somewhat of a complex return at this point in time, you probably need to just bite the bullet and have a CPA prepare the return. The other big thing about it is, and this gets back to one of the heart of the issues that we talk about constantly on this show, Lockwood, is that most of the time people think, in the eyes of the law, that, you know, you're innocent until proven guilty, okay? So everybody hears that phrase. Everybody knows from a criminal perspective that, you know, if you get arrested, you have the presumption of innocence.
Right.
It's the exact opposite when it comes to the tax law. I mean, I hate to say that, and I say it laughing only because it's kind of just one of those things. It's a little bit of a joke where if the IRS says it, they don't have to produce the goods, so to speak. It's the question is that can you produce the documents to refute what the IRS alleges? And that is just kind of one of the most backwards things. And when you get involved in tax law like I am, it's one of the things that you come to most. And when I sit across from taxpayers, I explain it to them. And sometimes it's like a weight just got dropped on them because they're like, wait a minute, you mean I now have to prove against what they're saying? And I tell them, yes. I said, whatever they assert against you is taken as true unless you
prove,
unless you, the taxpayer, prove otherwise. So it's very important. Substantiation is the key word here, meaning that anything that you put on your return, Lockwood, must be substantiated, and not by you saying, I did this, by you showing and proving that you did this because you've got a document that says you did.
Document.
Yeah, it's going to be very important when it comes to these audit situations.
Before we wrap it up, and this goes to the issue of the new tax law, and we talked, you mentioned a moment ago, we still have some outstanding accounts as far back as you said, 2019. Well, we went through the PPP program.
Yep.
And I forgot now what it all stands for. But
Paycheck Protection Program.
Yes. And there are still some outstanding issues on that, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
I mean, and its interpretation and also and how we've used those funds, because I know that all of a sudden there's new discoveries. We provided PPP funds to the rich and famous. I think they were talking about some Hollywood stars that were getting getting PPPs, getting funds from the government.
So, I think you know, the kind of the moral of the story on the Paycheck Protection Program and some other COVID relief programs was that they were trying to get money in the hands of individuals as quickly as possible, because it wasn't a, oh, we can just give you this back on your return, you know, a year from now. No, it was businesses that were struggling at the moment. So what they did was they made the program probably a little more over-inclusive. So yeah, you're going to have stories like you just talked about, Lockwood, about people that received these funds that, you know, raise an eyebrow, so to speak. And the question is whether or not there was fraud involved. I mean, that's what it boils down to when it comes to this. I mean, you know, a lot of good businesses in town have gotten their paycheck protection money, used it for exactly what it was designed for, which was to preserve, you know, paychecks for employees, pay some utilities and some rent for the business so they can keep operating, you know, and pay those allowable expenses back. And they've gotten their letters back saying that, hey, your loan is fully forgiven.
Right.
So, you know, you find yourself in that boat, you got nothing to worry about. These other issues that pop up, you know, we'll see what happens when, you know, the investigations begin and how it all went down. I will tell you that there is a credit out there. So this is kind of an interesting one. So even people that took the Paycheck Protection Program under a Biden program, there is a way to get back some payroll taxes that you paid. So, you know, I'm just mentioning that to our listeners, because if you're a business out there who suffered during COVID and can prove that you did, you know, have a reduction in income or reduction in services that you were able to provide due to COVID, there may be a potential for you to get back some additional funds from the government. Now, the money will not be paid like the Paycheck Protection Program that was paid immediately, and then you go back and reconcile it. This one would be where you would file amended returns, basically, and claim a credit, and then ultimately that money will be paid, and it'll probably be sometime in the next year that money will be paid to you. But just want you to hear that so you can talk to your accountant to know that there is this ability to get some payroll taxes refunded potentially, even if you took the PPP money.
Is there a time frame for filing an amended tax reform? Tax form?
Typically we mentioned 3 years.
3 years,
yeah,
okay.
So we're still within the window relative to any COVID filing, so we're fine there. But yeah, it's you know, there's just so much in the tax law changes every year from year to year, and obviously this is this new bill, this Inflation Reduction Act, if that's what you want to call it, you know, is going to be interesting to see, and I think that we will be reporting on this for many weeks to come as to what are the devils in the details of this thing and how it actually is going to play out. But you know, that's the thing about the tax law. It's a moving target, Lockwood, sometimes.
Keeps you busy. Andrew Foster with Harvell and Collins. Again, that number, 252-826-9050-9050. And as we have discovered today, we better not take our tax issues casually or, you know, lightly. It definitely pays to work with a professional. And at Harvell and Collins, that would be Andrew Foster. Andrew, as always, thanks for being with us.